This episode of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast is presented by Empirica. That's Empirica, E-M-P-I-R-I-K-A. Empirica exists to amplify your brand's growth. A digital partner to the ambitious, the creative engine launching brands and igniting growth. The unagency where relationships matter, not transactions. Let's connect at EmpiricaMedia.com. That's EmpiricaMedia.com. Let's get the show started.
This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, where the trade of sport collides with fashion and innovation. Your hosts, Mike Gugat, Neil Schwartz, and John Peters, break down news, discuss trends, and interview industry influencers. The Sport Lifestyle Podcast is on now.
Hi, and welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. On this episode, we speak to Jessica Berman, Deputy Commissioner of the National Lacrosse League. Jessica is officially the highest-ranking woman in a men's professional sports league after taking on this role earlier in January this year. Jessica spoke about how she transitioned her career after spending nearly a decade at the NHL, how working with Gary Bettman prepared her for this role, diversity versus inclusion, and how the NLL is working to unify the industry to grow the game. Now let's get to Jessica.
Welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. Today, our guest is Jessica Berman. She is the Deputy Commissioner and Executive Vice President of Business Affairs at the National Lacrosse League. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, and we'll forgive any background noise during COVID times if we have any kids running around. So our listeners will definitely understand. Jessica, it probably wasn't, you know, the season you expected when you came on to the NLL, but perhaps kind of just how did that come about, and how has your time been during the COVID situation?
Well, I spent about 13 years at the NHL and was in two different roles there. First 9 years as Deputy General Counsel, and then moved into a business role leading their corporate social responsibility efforts. And about a year before I left, I started to wonder what the next steps for my career would be if I wanted to maximize my potential. And so I began to think about what, if anything, would lure me away from my home sweet home of the NHL. Many people were very surprised when I left, including me to some extent, because in a lot of ways, my identity was very intertwined with the NHL. It was very hard to sort of detangle. But I was introduced to Nick Sakevich, who's the commissioner of the National Lacrosse League, about 8 months before I ended up taking on the role. And we started a series of conversations, which really were more about our values and how we view leadership and growth strategy, very sort of philosophical macro conversation. And we really began to hit it off. And he, at the time, was looking to fill a general counsel position, which I was very clear from the outset was not what I was looking for. In my soul searching for the future of my career, I really had made a decision that I loved the NHL, and pretty much the only thing that would lure me away would be a role that would essentially marry together my prior experience plus give me exposure to some new areas that I hadn't done previously. I was really ready for the next step in my career, and I knew that that would be really challenging to find. And so he said, after many months of us getting to know each other, what would it take for you to come? And I said, well, basically describe that, and essentially got the role that I have now, where I'm the deputy commissioner of the league and essentially support the efforts to grow every aspect of the league from a revenue and relevance perspective.
Awesome. And I just want to kind of double click on that if I can for a second. So we have a lot of times listeners, founders of companies, big and small, and people who are retired executives. Maybe talk a little bit about that decision process and how you kind of knew what you wanted, or maybe you didn't know what you wanted. But one thing you said there that struck with me was you wanted a new challenge. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I actually appreciate that question, because I think not enough people follow up to that thread. And I love talking about it because I'm very sort of introspective person, and I have a daily practice of writing in a journal. And part of what I did in when I had made the decision that I essentially needed to think about it, the decision I made was that I needed to carve out time to make it a priority to think about my future. And that it wasn't going to be like a 5-minute thought process or a 1-day thought process, but that if I wanted to make it a priority, I had to devote time specifically to that, like any priority in life, whether it's professional or personal. And so I actually went out and bought Moleskine specifically for this, and every day wrote about people who I thought had interesting jobs or interesting roles that I'd want to meet, thought about my network of people who I could begin to talk to, thought about the things that I really loved about my past roles, about the things that were missing from my portfolio in terms of areas I've had exposure to. So it really was a very intentional and methodical process that took a year. And ultimately, it became clear to me not just what I wanted to do, but that if I had an opportunity to essentially get a fresh start somewhere, how I would approach it. So that process essentially segued into me doing a lot of introspection about how I might approach a new role in a new environment with new people differently than I had shown up in my prior roles, because I really grew up at the NHL. I thought back on when I started there, and in a lot of ways, I started when I was still a kid. And you sort of fall into some of those self-perpetuating cycles where you affirm the things that people think about you based on past experience. And so I really took some time to think about how I wanted to be, because I felt like I could write my story. And I've been really appreciative to have that opportunity, and it's really worked out well for me.
Could you speak a little bit to, you know, you said you grew up at the NHL, and obviously an established, you know, league, a property. You know, what was some of the mentors or the wisdom that you gleaned there that now you're able to impart on what you're doing now?
Yeah, I reflect on that often. I've actually reached it back out to several people at the NHL, but specifically, I'll give a shout out to Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, who I was lucky enough to work directly with and for many years, both in the context of collective bargaining as well as from a business perspective. And there are so many things that they do well. One of the things that frankly has been a new area of exposure for me has been board management and corporate governance, managing our owners. That's not something that was my responsibility when I was at the NHL, that sat with Gary and Bill. And I always felt that they were masterful at that. They were just outstanding and very strategic communicators, and very much relationship driven. And I realized during my time there how great they were at those roles. But I reflected even more on it in my current role, and I had my first board meeting that I had specific areas of responsibility for managing the meeting. And it was in January in Las Vegas, and I contacted both of them after the meeting and said, like, I couldn't stop thinking in that meeting how prepared I felt for my role. And it was in large part due to watching them run board meetings 4 times a year for 13 years. And so I'm very thankful for all of my teachers and mentors at the NHL. And I said, I felt like I grew up there. They were sort of like my parents in developing me, and I'm very appreciative.
Awesome. And I would say on the introspection piece, I can relate, Jessica. It's been similar for me. And I think, you know, to go back one more career for you at when you were at a big law firm, I believe I read, a lot of corporate lawyers don't, I think the biggest thing you take away there is, you know, at each phase, you have to do introspection, no matter how long that takes, and sets time aside for your next thing. I think it was very, very thoughtful. That's awesome insight. I want to switch gears a little bit, Jessica. I think I read you are now the highest ranking female officer for a professional sports team. Did I get that right? Something like that. Is that still true?
For men's professional sport.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. And so, obviously some of the work you did with Kim Davis and the crew at NHL and diversity and inclusion, you know, it's been I'll be completely honest. It's been a pain point for us to find women executives and females in executive roles in sport. Any advice that you would give to a young lady and how can we all be better as an industry? Because I think a lot of times we point fingers, but at the end of the day, it's kind of all on us.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I talk to young men and women all the time about this topic. And I do think about it a lot. I think about diversity and inclusion as two separate things. And I think this answers your question about why women don't find themselves at senior levels when they're, say, around my age or maybe slightly older. Why it becomes more challenging as you move up the chain. I always describe diversity as the invitation to the party, and inclusion is having fun at the party. And I think the corporate America and the sports industry has done a really good job with the diversity component. It's measurable. It's easy to address. You can institute protocols and policies for hiring practices. And over time you can see your progress. So it's like very tactical and manageable, and you can celebrate your wins. Inclusion is much more sticky because it's subjective. And, you know, does one person in a meeting feel that they have the ability to contribute, that they're valued, that their voice matters, that they're being heard? If not, is it because of their gender or just because they don't have a valuable contribution? It's like much harder to diagnose the issue and provide a solution. And so I think that is the more challenging component of the greater challenge that we all have for having more diversity at all levels of the organization. And so I think to answer the second part of your question, what men and women can do, because I think I wouldn't give women a pass on this either, is to be conscious of that. I think if there was a room full of four women and one man is in the room, that one man is going to have a harder time having his voice heard. Similarly, if there's four men and one woman, that woman's going to have a harder time having her voice heard. And so I try to be conscious of kind of who is underrepresented in the room in any given time. So that's not necessarily just for women or just for men, and making sure that they're invited into the conversation, and calling out people who most of the time unintentionally are squashing contributions from underrepresented groups. I think a lot of times that occurs because when people have been in the majority and haven't had a lot of exposure to the underrepresented group or the minority, they're very used to being validated in their opinion. And I think the reason diversity matters is because it provides a diverse perspective, which oftentimes means that someone's going to disagree with you. And unless you've experienced having someone disagree with you and you're comfortable with debate or conflict, people tend to shy away from those interactions. And so it requires a lot of sort of checking your ego and checking your interactions to say, hold on, like, this is not personal. She or he is providing a diverse perspective. Maybe there's something valuable that I could learn from this interaction instead of defending your position. And I think that just requires a training and experience repetitively. And unfortunately, I think it takes probably a generation for those types of things to change. I don't think it can be changed overnight, but for those who want it to be better and want to make a difference, I think those are the things that we can all do better. Even for me, like, I try to be really conscious of it. It's very hard to not immediately defend your position, and instead to actually listen and ask questions so that you can make the company's position even stronger.
So clearly that description of the experience that you had in the NHL, you know, a men's league,
But then the perspective that you now bring to lacrosse, also a men's league, could you speak with that perspective as to what you see the bigger opportunity is for professional lacrosse?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I love about the National Lacrosse League is that we're sort of in the sweet spot where we've been around for 34 years and our owners are stable and respected sports owners in the industry, and that they own NHL or NBA teams, NFL teams. Yet we're small enough to be nimble and to be able to pivot and be innovative. The thing that I say to our team internally all the time is that I love that our league has that juxtaposition, that we have the best lacrosse athletes in the entire world, yet our culture is one of fun and innovation and not afraid of making a change. And I think that's really unique. You know, when you think about the other leagues, they just tend to be a little more traditional and conservative in their approach to innovation. And our culture doesn't really have that barrier. The desire to be the most entertaining sport in an arena, in an indoor facility, is like our goal. And we don't define our universe as attracting lacrosse fans or lacrosse people. We define our universe of fans as people looking for entertainment. And actually our data supports that. Close to 70% of our fans have no connection to the sport of lacrosse. The people who come to our games tend to be millennials looking to have a good time. Our arena presentation, game presentation, is unmatched, I would say, in professional sports. There's music playing during run of show. It's a party. One of our teams uses the tagline, come for the party, stay for the game. And I always reference that for anybody who's never been to an NLL game. If you want to imagine what it's like to come to an NLL game, imagine an event where you come to the party and you stay for the game. And so I feel like there's just huge opportunity right now. And it's been really exciting to be part of.
That's awesome. I want to keep talking about maybe the state of lacrosse. I know, you know, when you were at the NHL, growing the game for hockey was a big passion of yours. We talked about that several times. Lacrosse has been known, I guess, last decade or so as one of the faster growing team sports in America. And, you know, it seems like that growth has not flattened, but it's maybe a couple percent points now. Any thoughts on how big lacrosse can grow, your league's role in that, and what more should we be doing as an industry to get more people playing lacrosse?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges I've seen in the sport of lacrosse is the fragmentation among the different stakeholders. And so I think the lacrosse ecosystem could really use a unification strategy where we're all working together to grow the game. I think the NLL absolutely should and will play a leadership role in that process, like we did in hockey with the Declaration of Principles, where we unified the 17 hockey stakeholders internationally. This is a smaller ecosystem because there's less stakeholders to manage, but it's more fragmented. So it's not as clear who is the leader, who are the leaders, who are the influencers at the grassroots level. And because it's the growth in lacrosse has been really like a bottom-up groundswell, at least that's my point of view to answer your question about why it's sort of stagnated. Because in order for the growth to sort of be facilitated and expedited and be catalyzed, we need that leadership to kind of inspire the strategy.
So Jessica, we'll get you out of here on a fun one. I may have been stalking your Twitter threads the other day. What are you watching on Netflix, and how are you surviving being quarantined right now? What's the secret?
Surviving by running a ton. Thankfully, I'm grateful every day for my run that I don't miss, and my yoga on my Peloton app that I do almost every day. That's how I'm staying sane. In terms of passing the time with my two young boys who are 9 and 12, we have our shows that we watch. There's no shortage of that, which has been good. We watch Survivor as a family, and we actually just started watching All American, which is slightly not age appropriate, but we're going with it. And I'm being forced to have a lot of uncomfortable conversations with my 9 and 12 year old, but it was a good compromise for us to both actually enjoy the show. So it was better than watching some of the other options that they would have wanted to watch, which would not have been fun for me. So that's how we're passing the time, trying to force my kids to be active. I've actually repurposed their allowance to pay them to be physically active. So trying to get them away from their screens, which is a challenge, but apparently 25 cents for every 30 minutes is the going rate. So that's what I'm paying for, and we're doing the best we can.
Well, with inflation, hopefully that doesn't go up to a dollar sometime soon for your sake. All right. So last thing, I promise, since I just started the Peloton app, about a month ago, the yoga classes, who is your instructor of choice?
Anna Greenberg.
Yeah. Yeah. They have amazing content. It's really, really awesome.
I love Anna Greenberg on the yoga mat, and I love Allie Love on the bike, or Robin, or Jen Sherman. Those are my three. Those are usually my three go-tos on the bike if it's raining outside.
Your go-tos. That's awesome. Well, Jessica Berman, this has been great catching up with you. First of all, congratulations on the new role. We'll be watching and rooting for you guys on the sidelines here. And we'd love to bring you back post-COVID to talk about kind of some of the initiatives and how everyone came out of this. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, play hard, or at least look good doing it.